pieces up and I fall. Tell me the meaning. All I've got inside to fight for. This is Every Stripe, a K-pop Demon Hunters fanfic written by Gveret and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated NC-17 and contains the relationship Mira, Rumi, Zoe, with additional tags for post-canon, post-movie, touch-starved Rumi, Rumi needs a hug, friends to lovers, first time, bottom Rumi, service top Mira, top Zoe, sub Rumi, born with feelings. Author's notes. Just a bit of porn and a lot of feelings. I think Rumi really needs this. Warning for mentions of emotional neglect. Don't you be afraid of the morning after. The night is darker than the dawn. And all of your days have been getting harder to make you brighter than before. It starts simple, small, almost unconscious. Like, Rumi barely even notices she's doing it. Zoe will playfully bump her shoulder against Rumi's arm. Truly the most incidental, fraternal, fleeting brush of bare skin. And will send this thrilling rush through Rumi's whole body. A burning urge to reciprocate. Where before she'd have laughed, stepped away, adjusted her sleeve, now she leans in. Bumps back, maybe even reaches out to caress Zoe's wrist, shoulder, back, like she could keep this feeling forever if only she can preserve the momentum of uninterrupted touch. She lets go, yes, of course, but for a sliver of a second there, when instinct is the sole driver, she tries. Or sometimes it's this. Mira holds her hand. And she escalates. She'll rub her thumb over her knuckles. She'll play with her fingers. She'll squeeze, not hard, just enough to test the give of Mira's skin, the resistance of the bones, the plush indulgence of the fleshy heel of her palm. It's like every part of the human body holds a sudden and intense fascination to her. Like she must test it thoroughly and constantly against the metal of her own skin. It's gotta be a demon thing for sure. And it doesn't stop there. She'll swoop in to hug Zoe from behind when she passes her by in the kitchen, or grab Mira and twirl her when they're dancing in the living room. She just finds herself reaching out apropos of absolutely nothing when it must seem a total non sequitur to touch Mira's hair just to remind herself what it feels like, to rest her chin on top of Zoe's head just to be close. When it's couch time, she schemes and wriggles and crawls until she's touching them both, head in Mira's lap and feet in Zoe's, or legs wrapped around Zoe and back pressed to Mira's side. That's who Rumi is, she knows, when she isn't meticulously holding herself back. Someone who takes everything she's given and is always hungry for more. She'll stretch and push and inch forward, relentless, endless, if she's left unchecked. Mira and Zoe haven't asked her to stop yet. haven't shown her the perimeter of their tolerance, the limits of their patience. And that's no good at all. That's terrifying. Because Rumi knows these things aren't always said outright. And she knows there is always, always a line. Historically, she's only ever found it by crossing it. And she'd do absolutely anything not to reach that point ever again. When Rumi was young, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, she used to hug Celine all the time. She'd clung to her leg and held her hand and climbed on her back when she was kneeling so she could butt her forehead against Celine's neck from behind and blow a raspberry on her shoulder and laugh into her nice smelling hair. She did that every chance she got because it felt so good and she loved her so much and she just wanted and wanted and wanted and a reason to stop hadn't occurred to her yet. And Celine had let her do it, ever gracious and kind. It had taken some years for Rumi to notice the subtle cues. A body stiffening in her arms, a hand slack in her grip. Quiet in the space where an answering laugh would be. A hand on the shoulder, both grounding and holding artfully at bay. Celine had never said anything. Touch was never forbidden or rebuked or even discouraged. Nothing so dramatic. But as Rumi grew and developed social awareness, acquiring the ability to see others as full people rather than an extension of herself, she naturally learned to differentiate touch that was comfortable, reciprocal, wanted, from what was mere fulfillment of obligation. It turned out, most of it had been the latter. And as she learned more about demons alongside learning about people, it became quite clear why. Here's the thing she remembers. She was maybe 7 or 8, already homeschooled, of course. Celine was teaching her everything she needed to know in the way only Celine could. But one thing Celine couldn't teach her all by herself was teamwork. So Rumi had been enrolled in dance class. Rumi loved it. Even if the other kids thought she was a little weird and she often felt shy around them, there was something thrilling about being around kids her age. And when they were dancing, moving together in a predetermined pattern with perfectly well-defined and explicable rules, where every variable was known and monitored and measured, it didn't even matter if she was weird or shy or not fully human. She was good at this. She liked it. And it felt good. At the end of the year, they put on a show. And at the end of the show, all the guardians were led to a dressing room adjoining the stage so they could greet their flushed and beaming kids, fresh off their performance. Rumi was really looking forward to this, because one of Celine's most consistent traits was that she was happy when Rumi performed well, and Rumi really loved making her happy. Celine wasn't among the first people there. But this gave Rumi a chance to quietly observe the other kids with their families, which was nice. Hyun was being spun around in the air by a man with glasses, and a teenage girl had picked up Jun and set him on her shoulders. Smiles and laughter filled the air like an ambient warmth, like the way the Hanmoon felt sometimes when she was being good. Rumi's eyes snapped to a woman with flowing black hair with a gray streak who had just come in, but it wasn't Celine. And then Min was running full speed toward her, cackling loudly like nothing else mattered at all. And she jumped, and the woman easily caught her and held her so close, cradling her in her arms, wide grin morphing into a kiss pressed to the crown of Min's head. The woman murmured something, and Min nodded with a smile. And suddenly, Rumi really needed to get out of the room. Celine turned out to be a few paces off from the rest of the non-parent crowd, leaning against a wall. Gripped by some strange, irresistible urge, Rumi started running toward her. Even though she knew she hadn't seen her yet, and she'd never, ever done something like this before. And when Rumi flung herself at her, Celine did catch her. But she didn't hold her. She steadied her so that she wouldn't fall, and touched her shoulder so she'd stay in place, and stepped back. And on her face, wide-eyed and slightly pinched, Rumi suddenly recognized a new emotion. Fear. She remembers feeling a searing embarrassment, a lick of flame rushing through her body like flubbing a simple move so spectacularly she falls on her face and sprains a wrist and smashes Celine's second favorite vase. Like doing something so badly it's painful and thinking it's right, thinking it feels good, not even knowing that when it's done correctly it should look the way it looked in the dressing room with the other kids. Like something she had never even imagined was possible. It should never, ever look like this. And Celine had never mentioned. Celine had never said anything. She'd just let Rumi do these things badly and uninvited, endured it silently, waiting patiently for Rumi to figure things out on her own time. So Rumi started touching Celine less. She'd never been particularly close to any other people, and had never touched anyone else regularly to begin with. So this naturally translated to rarely touching anyone at all. And Celine seemed all the more comfortable with her for it, sharing her space more readily now that the threat of unwanted touch had been removed. She was probably so relieved. It had taken Rumi such a long time to catch up. Rumi tried not to berate herself for it overmuch. She'd been a kid. Now she knew, and she was acting appropriately. That was good. It was a relief to her, too. She liked thinking of herself as mature and perceptive and considerate. The kind of person, or whatever, that it was always safe to be around. If the price for that was this new and persistent yearning she had to learn how to manage, no problem. She was pretty good at learning new things. Or, at least, she was good at working really hard until she did. Getting to know Zoe and Mira had been a bit of a shock at first. It was a collection of things. They were beautiful, of course. Like, breathtakingly, can't take her eyes off them, beautiful. But that's, like, part of the job, right? They were also charming, smart, talented, skilled, strong, brave, righteous. All still within the job description. Then they were also funny, goofy, a little bit weird. They made Rumi laugh, and she made them laugh too. They were developing a shared sort of language, and it wasn't foreign to Rumi for once. It included her. It was made for her by her. It felt a bit like magic. Finally, they were hers. Her team, her band. She was one of three and not a thing apart. But even more than all of that, they seemed to like her. Maybe her demonhood wasn't entirely obvious if you didn't already know. Maybe they couldn't intrinsically just tell. Maybe. At first glance, she just seemed like a normal person. And maybe if she played her cards right, it would stay that way. They would keep looking at her like a peer, like a friend, and be willing to hang around her and spend time with her, and maybe even touch her. Though, of course, they shouldn't. But they could want to, and she could feel it. Maybe if she kept just the right amount of distance, she could still stay close. Close enough to bask in their warmth, but not so much that they're singed by hers. It was a dangerous game. A delicate balance. Selena drilled into her well what was at stake, and on a more personal, selfish level, Rumi was already intimately familiar with what she had to lose. And she did stumble. There had been some very close calls, especially during those harrowing transitory periods where her marks had been spreading rapidly with puberty, and her wardrobe struggled to catch up. But she learned to read them, and they learned to read her. And it didn't take that long, all things considered, for the casual touches to wane in frequency, become localized to ostensibly safer body parts. The hands, the face, the shoulders. As the patterns grew, those areas shrank, and Zoe and Mira had visibly adjusted accordingly. It felt something like a loss, but Rumi understood that they were doing for her what she had learned to do for Celine, reading her discomfort and doing their best to mitigate. It was so sweet, thoughtful. It was silly to mourn that. Of course, she still did. But then the patterns and the new honeymoon and what it sounds like. And all at once, the touches were back. And this time, on bare skin. So, it's only natural for there to be a new adjustment period now, too. No problem at all. She's got this. She's had practice. It's a late Tuesday night, a day after their last show of the current roster. They're all piled together on Mira's bed. They'd watched an old nature documentary about dung beetles, because Zoe thinks they're cute. Then they just talked for over an hour. And now they've lapsed into a comfortable silence. Falling asleep would probably be the natural progression from here, but somehow the atmosphere doesn't seem sleepy. Mira is in fluffy PJs, playing one of her meticulously compiled playlists off her phone. Zoe has her hair down, and has teased a strand out of Rumi's braid as well, and is playing with it absently. Rumi is in a tank top and shorts, settled comfortably between them, and she's glowing. It's not a big deal, really. It's just something that happens around them sometimes. Rumi thinks it probably happens most often when she's happy, or excited, or when she wants attention. She wants attention now. She butts her forehead into Zoe's shoulder, rubs her nose against her arm. Zoe obligingly turns to her, smiling.
"Aw, look at you," she coos. "Our own little bedside lamp."
Zoe presses a cool palm to Rumi's bare abdomen where her top had ridden up. Rumi closes her eyes in contentment. She reaches out to grasp Mira by the wrist, needing to touch her, too. She runs her fingertips over the tendons, feeling them shift. "You're so warm," Zoe murmurs, fingers zigzagging along a purple path. Bioluminescence is usually super energetically efficient, not much heat. Guess you're not a mushroom. She smiles.
In the past, Rumi may have heard that as, "You're unnatural," or, "There's something wrong with you." Now she just hears it for the curiosity it is. A type of attention, of care, of affection. She presses into the touch. "You calling me energetically inefficient?"
"Mm-hmm. You always give 110%, even to a 25% job."
Zoe's fingers have reached Rumi's collarbone. They crest the rigid bone and track upwards, loyally following the pattern curled possessively around Rumi's neck.
"Is this a 25% job?"
Her fingertips at Rumi's throat, Zoe leans down to husk directly into Rumi's ear.
45%, maybe.
Acting completely on instinct, Rumi turns her head and nuzzles her face against Zoe's. Their lips brush. Rumi can hear her intake of breath. Rumi pushes forward, rubbing her face in Zoe's neck. She takes in a long sniff of Zoe's skin.
Zoe makes a strangled noise on the edge of distress. All at once, Rumi's actions catch up with her. She pulls back.
"Oh," she whimpers. "You can't keep letting me get away with this." Zoe blinks at her.
"What do you mean?"
"You're being really kind." Rumi stumbles. She feels dizzy. "Really, really accommodating. Thank you. But you don't need to put up with... Just tell me to fuck off. I'll listen."
Even as she says that, she's still running her hand all over Mira's forearm, thumb digging in at every pass over the delicate skin of her wrist.
She's such a hypocrite. It's like she's used up a whole lifetime supply of self-control in the past 20 years, and now she's fresh out.
A muscle in Mira's face twitches.
"The fuck do you mean, accommodating? You think we're doing you a favor or something?"
She looks almost pissed. Rumi snatches her hands back.
"No, I just mean, if I ever make you uncomfortable, you can tell me."
Mira squints at her.
"Obviously we can tell you. The fuck are you even talking about? You're like the most careful, considerate person I know."
Rumi glances down. "Not naturally," she admits. "That's just something I learned. I think naturally, I'm more like someone who doesn't know when to stop."
"Bullshit," Mira says immediately.
Rumi's eyes snap up.
"Rumi," Zoe says carefully, like breaking difficult news. "You're just a sensual person. It's okay. It's really hot."
"We thought you were a prude," Mira helpfully supplies.
"We so did."
"It's a nice surprise."
"You sure had some tricks up your sleeve."
Rumi blinks at them. She'd never really thought of herself as sensual. She just thought she was a bit bad at reading people and a bit naturally unpleasant to be around. Someone who always wanted to take more than they were given. Greedy or needy or something like that. This sort of recontextualization feels really... Well, it feels... It just feels like after a lifetime of being denied something incredible, she's finally been granted permission.
"And you like that? In a person? Or whatever?"
Rumi asks, just to clarify.
Zoe laughs, and Mira smirks and says, "We like you as a person."
To which Zoe quickly adds, "And we like that in you, the person, too." They've been making it a point to call her a person a lot since. It's really impossible not to love them.
Okay, Rumi says slowly.
She's already begun bargaining with her own heart. If they like touching her, it's okay to like it too. If they like that she's sensual, it's probably okay to touch them back. Maybe she could even touch them first and see how they respond and proceed from there. But be careful. She isn't always the sharpest about this, but she can talk to them. They will talk to her. Okay, Rumi repeats more confidently. This is great. This is fantastic. This is better than anything that's happened to anyone ever. This is exactly what she's always wanted. Just don't mess this up. Rumi shifts onto her side, lightly touches Zoe's jaw with her fingertips, and gently brushes her mouth against Zoe's. A repeat of the last touch, but this time with intention. Zoe makes a little huffing sound and increases the pressure. She parts her lips just slightly, letting Rumi feel just a hint of the inside of her mouth. Then Rumi's being rolled around and pressed up against Mira, and then she's being kissed again. It's slow and sweet and sensuous, unhurried and confident, with just the suggestion of teeth, an implied edge. It's Mira. She lets her go, and Rumi flops back onto the pillows. Rumi's breathing is a little labored. She wants to grab Mira and kiss her again, climb in her lap and touch her hair and her neck and her fluffy pajamas and something else, something she's not clear about yet, but she knows she will be when she gets there. She just needs a little bit of insurance. Could you just tell me when I'm being too much? And I'll stop, Rumi says. I don't always figure it out on my own. Mira is giving her a kind of an opaque look. Why do you think you'll be too much? I'm not so good at moderating, Rumi explains reluctantly. I can shut it all off, but I don't want to do that anymore. And I think the only other option is, like, everything. Mira and Zoe exchange a glance. And then Mira is looking at Rumi so directly it's almost a little intimidating. Good, she says simply. Give us everything then. Involuntarily, Rumi whimpers. Mira toys with the straps of her tank top.
We could start with this. What do you think?
She asks Zoe. Away with it, Zoe commands. And then Mira's long fingers are sliding under the top, tracing a blazing path up Rumi's skin and dragging the fabric along.
Rumi isn't wearing a bra. She squirms.
Arms up, Mira directs, and her thumbs graze the sides of Rumi's breasts as she peels the top all the way off. Rumi gasps. Mira sits back on her heels. Both she and Zoe are just looking at Rumi. Rumi's nipples harden under that attention alone.
Gorgeous, Zoe mutters. Well, what are you going to give us next?
The question is for Rumi this time. My heart, Rumi thinks cornily. But says, my shorts?
Good answer.
Those same clever fingers thread beneath the elastic of Rumi's shorts, hands briefly cupping the outside of her thighs before the shorts are pulled off. And then Rumi is sitting on Mira's bed, completely bare except for her plain underwear, damp and hard and glowing softly purple, with Zoe and Mira fully clothed. Before she can get self-conscious, Mira is stepping out of her own pants and reaching out for her, cupping her jaw and the back of her neck and bending down and kissing her. Zoe makes an excited little noise beside them. Mira releases Rumi's mouth and gives her chest an open-handed shove so she's lying flat on her back, then grabs her by the hips and drags her bodily to the edge of the bed. Rumi giggles helplessly.
"Here's what's gonna happen,"
Mira starts, and Rumi stares into her eyes, transfixed, a fish on a hook. She could say anything at this point, Rumi thinks. Offer to dump a bucket of ice water on Rumi's head, or use her as a table to eat ramyun off, or sketch little fluorescent dicks all over her patterns, and Rumi would enthusiastically agree and say thank you.
"I'm gonna take off your panties," Mira says calmly. "I'm gonna spread you out and just look at you for a bit, because we've been waiting a while."
"Mm-hmm," Zoe chimes in.
"And then I am going to eat you out," Mira continues, implacable, "until you're dripping down my fucking throat. And I am going to put on a nice pink little strap and work it inside you. And I am going to fuck you hard."
She rocks the bulk of her body against Rumi's at that, and Rumi probably could have slid off the bed and kept falling forever if she wasn't being held down so securely, so well.
"And you are going to come at least twice."
Maybe Rumi could come just from this. Couldn't she? She's heard of people coming untouched.
Was that just a porn thing?
Mira digs her nails in a little to get her attention. Rumi moans, low and wounded.
"We good?"
Mira asks. Rumi nods like her life depends on it. Mira raises an eyebrow at her.
"Lost your voice again?"
"Yes! No, please," Rumi blurts out. "We're good." Mira smiles down at her, soft.
"Okay,"
she says, teasing tone gone.
"Thanks for trusting us, Rumi."
And then she does exactly as she'd promised. First, the underwear. It sticks a little as Mira removes it. Rumi is already so wet. Mira touches the very tip of a stripe right between Rumi's breasts, presses her hand over it, drags it down Rumi's body, leaving a trail of light behind. She follows the pattern until it disappears into Rumi's pubic hair. She runs her fingers through it, sifting, playful.
"So they do go all the way down," she remarks. "Do they go all the way in?"
Mira uses two fingers to slide through the hair, part her outer lips, and hold her obscenely open. Mira leans down and gently blows. The inside of Rumi's cunt, already wet and hot and fully exposed to the air, tingles at the incongruous coolness of it. Rumi shivers. Mira licks her lips, lays her cheek on Rumi's thigh, and looks.
"Mira," Rumi moans. "Yeah,"
Mira's voice is so low.
"You're shining inside, too."
Rumi clenches. And, of course, Mira is looking. Mira sees. Rumi clenches again at the thought. And just when Rumi is starting to feel a little too vulnerable, Zoe smacks a hand over Mira's eyes. "Quit hogging. I want to see." Rumi chokes on a laugh as Zoe ducks down to have a look. "Oh, you're an outie," she exclaims delightedly. "That's fun."
And she runs her thumb along Rumi's labia minora, more of a little greeting than a touch meant to arouse. And she rips off her own clothes, throwing them carelessly behind her, and climbs cheerfully onto Rumi's lap. Zoe bounces a little, leaning over her. Rumi can feel her cunt pressing into her stomach. "Hi," Zoe says with a grin. "Hi," Rumi smiles back, a little lightheaded. "Wanna watch me touch myself on top of you?" Rumi's breath has been sucked right out of her lungs, like maybe her arousal burnt up all of the oxygen. "Please," she gasps out. "Oh, Rumi, so polite." Zoe has already started squeezing and pulling on her own nipple. She bites her lip as she slides her other hand down, dragging a shimmer of arousal over her clit with her middle finger and circling slowly. Rumi finds her own hands hovering over her, wanting to touch, but unsure if she should. Mira takes them in hers and places them on Zoe's thigh, waist. "She likes a firm touch," she instructs, and Rumi tightens her grip. Zoe pushes against her and smiles. Mira rummages in a drawer and comes up with a bottle of lube, a harness, and the promised pink dildo. It matches her hair. How cute! It's shaped like a cock, with a ridged head and prominent veins, but it's not too big. Rumi thinks she can take it. Mira secures the harness straps and fits it in, runs a lube-slicked fist over it in a confident, practiced motion, and Rumi suddenly discovers she really, really wants to take it. She wants to take whatever Mira wants to give her. Right now, though, Mira is sliding down to her knees, her bobbing pink cock sliding out of sight. Now, there is a girl straddling Rumi's stomach and touching herself, and a girl on her knees between Rumi's legs, and Rumi only has the one pair of eyes, one pair of hands, and it's a torture, an agony, truly of the highest order. Zoe snorts at her. "Here," she says, and plucks Rumi's hand off her waist, guiding it between her legs. "Let's divide and conquer, okay? You'll touch me and watch her. Just try not to pass out when she starts licking." And now her fingers are brushing Zoe's cunt, silky, warm, and wet. And Zoe sighs as though in relief, as though she's been waiting just for Rumi's hand. Mira's breath lands hot and humid on Rumi's pussy, and then impossibly hotter follows her mouth. Rumi can feel her patterns blinking in and out, her body running hot and cold. It's too good. It's everything she's ever wanted, and she can't handle it after all. She feels apart from it, at a sudden distance from her body. She knew she wasn't meant for this, but she's so greedy, so selfish, she can't bear for it to stop. "Rumi, you're doing so well," Zoe's voice drifts over her. "Focus on my voice, yeah? Your hand feels so good on me. Because it's your hand. Doesn't it feel good when Mira touches you? Because it's Mira. So good. It feels so good. And it's Mira. It's Mira touching her. It's Zoe that she's touching. So good. It feels incredible." "That's right," Zoe encourages. "You can take it, right? You're taking it so well for us. How about you open your eyes and take that hand out of your mouth? You can give it to me instead." And her eyes are closed, Rumi realizes, and she is biting hard into her own knuckles. She does as Zoe says. Her jaw relaxes, and a headache she hadn't even been aware of fades away. She gives Zoe her hand, and Zoe holds it over her own steadily beating heart. Rumi focuses on the rhythm. Okay, good, Zoe praises. Now look at Mira giving you head. Isn't that hot? She looks. Mira's hair is a little mussed. A strand of it clings tenuously to Rumi's inner thigh. Her eyes are screwed shut, her eyebrows drawn, seemingly in deep, contemplative concentration, like she's performing an extremely important task. And that task is eating Rumi out. It's hot. It's so hot. And Mira is moaning into her. She can feel the vibrations in her body. She's on her knees for her, moaning for her. It's hot for her, too. Here, put your thumb on my clit and hold your palm flat so I can grind on it. Like this. Feel how wet I am? That's all for you, Rumi. There's a look on Zoe's face she's never seen before. She's riding Rumi's hand with a palpable urgency, her abs tightening and releasing. They want this too. They want her. They're doing this together. It's okay. There you are, Zoe is grinning at her. She looks so pleased with her. Welcome back. Now stay. She grinds down in emphasis. Rumi laughs in relief. It's like something is released in her, some sort of tightly shut valve finally twisted open, letting a wild rush of sensation flood in. But she isn't being swept away by it. She's riding the wave. She's found the rhythm. She's part of it. It seems impossible that before it had been too good, and now it's better. But it is. Rumi bucks up into Mira's mouth, and Zoe grinds down on Rumi's hand, and it's just like making music. Intentional and harmonic and together. Then Mira's mouth is off her. And before Rumi can fully draw out her own whine of protest, Mira is fumbling around for the lube and squirting it generously all over Rumi's already fully drenched cunt. She must make a truly incredible face when Mira's fingers slide inside, because Zoe barks out a laugh from above her and tweaks her ear affectionately. And then Mira adds another fucking finger and puts her mouth back on her fucking clit. Have people really been doing this? Is this really something people do? It seems impossible, unconscionable, to be a part of something this good. Rumi is almost glad she hasn't been doing this, because if she had, she's sure she'd never shut up about it. She'd have been insufferable. Still might be. Zoe pinches her nipple and bites her earlobe and guides Rumi's hand in jerking her off the way she likes, knees digging into her sides. And Mira introduces another finger and fucks into her, hard and steady. And that's Mira inside her, literally inside of her body, where no one else has ever been, filling her up where she'd been empty and alone. And Rumi thrashes and thrusts wildly into her face as she comes. It rolls through her like a punch she wasn't braced for, shocking and breathtaking and activating the whole body. But it's almost a footnote in the face of this overwhelming sea of other sensory input. Her eyes are closed, but she can feel the rolling heat coming off her patterns, and she's sure they must be blinding. Ding, ding, ding! Zoe calls out triumphantly. One down! Mira pulls her face away to say, careful. If she finds out what a dork you are, she might not come back for seconds. And dives right back into licking out Rumi's still fluttering cunt around her own fingers. Oh, she knows. Zoe grinds down on Rumi's knuckles. Right, Rumi?
Rumi just reaches out to caress Zoe's cheek, fighting hard to blink her eyes open, regain some semblance of a rhythm to her hand on Zoe's cunt. I love you so much, she mumbles.
Down bad, Zoe diagnoses. We love you too, babe.
She looks behind her.
Right, Mira? Mira raises a thumb up from between Rumi's legs, and Rumi bursts out laughing.
The last of the contractions fade, and Mira's fingers slip out of Rumi's cunt. Mira licks over her with a flat tongue, soothing. She slows to a stop, her face resting pressed against Rumi, breathing in deep. Rumi wants to snap a picture and print it and frame it and hoard it somewhere no one else can see. Mira reemerges after a moment, sucking her fingers clean, licking at her palm all the way down to her wrist. It sends a hungry zing through Rumi's apparently insatiable cunt. Mira must notice. She smirks. She's so beautiful. Rumi wants to touch her so badly, and she seems so unfairly far away. Rumi instinctively reaches out to her, and Mira takes her hand, dropping down onto the bed beside her and placing a knuckle at her jaw, gently tilting her head sideways. Rumi immediately mashes her face against Mira's with a distinct lack of elegance. She tastes like Rumi. Rumi moans, bone deep and wanton. Her hips buck. She mindlessly takes her hand off Zoe's pussy to clutch desperately at Mira. She sucks on Mira's mouth, hungry and indelicate, high on her own flavor. She feeds on Mira's energy like the wild thing she is, finally able to touch the edges of the yawning space inside her, finally starting to sate this old, consuming, familiar hunger. But it's not enough. It's not enough. She wants more. Zoe huffs a little laugh.
I think that's a green light in round two.
Mira presses a last, closed-lipped kiss to Rumi's mouth and holds her face between finger and thumb, pressing into her skin, the accommodating give of her cheek. Her eyes are intense. She looks impassively at Rumi as Rumi pants and squirms against her. And then she smirks and slides off the bed.
I can't believe you were all, I'm too much. I'm just too hot for you to handle.
Zoe presses the back of her hand theatrically to her forehead, her other hand braced just by Rumi's left tit, her pussy drooling onto Rumi's abs.
That's my line.
Mira brushes her knuckles along the slit of Rumi's cunt and casually wipes them off on Rumi's stomach, leaving a shiny smudge behind.
We've handled twice as much on a show night, and three times on a weekend.
Rumi laughs, and clenches, and lifts her hips, chasing after a hand that is no longer there. Mira presses her back down, aggressively, and she laughs some more, helplessly, nearly delirious with joy and gratitude and love. she babbles.
We are hunters, voices strong, slaying demons with our song,
Mira taunts, and inches her hand back down, fingers spread, letting Rumi thrust between the V of them. No friction, but some pressure, a presence, which is so much on its own.
Laying demons with our song? Is that anything?
Zoe is back to rutting against Rumi's stomach, her hips sketching a lovely, languorous, sensual undulation, interrupted periodically by Rumi's own thrusting. Rumi can feel her sliding against her own arousal coating Rumi's skin, and she moans, wild with a ravenous, possessive desire to be marked, claimed, owned. And then Zoe bends down to kiss her. Open and wonderfully messy, and the hand around Rumi's pussy is gone, replaced a moment later with the silicone head of Mira's cock, and Mira is clutching her hips hard enough to hurt, to bruise, to leave a mark,
And then Mira is pushing into her, bullying the unyielding, smooth intrusion of her cock until it's inside Rumi's body, filling her up with another person, a person she loves. And she's pushing Rumi's thighs up, bent at the knee, manipulating her body as easily as an action figure, and thrusting into her so fucking deep. And she's biting at Zoe's shoulder to stifle a grunt. Zoe, who is kissing Rumi carelessly and smearing herself all over Rumi's stomach and reaching behind her to press the heel of her palm just above Rumi's mons pubis, grinding into Mira's cock inside her through the flimsy barrier of Rumi's flesh. And Rumi screams into Zoe's hot, slack, intoxicating mouth as she comes hard on Mira's dick, her cunt clenching, a ring of muscle futilely trying to close against the rigid presence inside her. A light bulb abruptly sparks to life in the hall. Mira keeps fucking her, holding her, maneuvering her as she wishes. One knee hooked over Mira's shoulder now. This angle is even deeper, more intense. Rumi whimpers, oversensitized, and Zoe kisses away the sound. Rumi can feel her patterns flaring with every stroke. Fuck. Fuck. She's amazing, isn't she? Mira is asking, and Zoe nods against Rumi's mouth. Are they talking about her? Rumi is beyond comprehension. All cognitive function suspended for the benefit of processing the sheer overabundance of sensation, and not even fully managing that. Mira has insinuated a hand around Zoe's body to rub at Zoe's cunt. Rumi can feel it grazing against the skin of her stomach, almost like it's creating a new erogenous zone wherever it touches. She doesn't know if she can come again like this, overwhelmed and oversensitive and still being pounded hard, but she doesn't want it to stop. Maybe ever. Zoe grabs her hands from where they've been clutching uselessly at the bedding and places them on her ass. And she releases Rumi's lips and latches onto her throat where the patterns burn hottest and sucks the flesh between her teeth, marking up already marked skin. And Rumi squirms under the two of them and pants and squeezes and feels Zoe move against her palms and her body and Mira's fingers and pants some more. It's this magic of action, reaction, like she'd never experienced before, maybe outside of battle, where the feedback of a proper hit is impact and whiplash and pain. And it's good. It's predictable, satisfying, correct. But this is better. Better when she gets back what she gives twofold. And what she gives, instead of violence, is love. She's so in love. Mira's hips snap brutally into her again. And again, these deep, juddering thrusts that make her bounce on the bed. And Mira's stopped touching Zoe so she can rub it herself. Frantic and selfish, harsh, jerky strokes that look almost painful. And Zoe twists around to look at her over her shoulder and says something Rumi doesn't catch. And then Mira is stuttering inside Rumi as she comes. The shock of Mira sliding out of her is almost more intense than the first breach. Rumi's cunt flutters around nothing, but Rumi has no patience for it, eyes glued to Mira, wild and flushed and panting, her soaking wet dildo bouncing comically up and down. Mira grabs savagely at Zoe, who twists more sharply at the want to meet her in an audible kiss. Mira surges, shoulders hunching, cupping the full breadth of Zoe's face in her hands. Zoe reaches blindly for Rumi, and Rumi dutifully holds her hand as she listens, half delirious, to their downright pornographic little oohs and the smacking sounds of their mouths coming together. Mira releases her, breathing heavily, and words immediately start spilling out of Zoe's mouth. Fuck, fuck,
Oh, Mira, shit, that was so hot. You fucked her so good. I could feel you moving inside her. Zoe is babbling. She's jacking herself furiously, but she's frowning. She looks frustrated. Rumi, can I got it. Rumi is running her free hand all over her. Ass, back, stomach, breasts, collarbone, neck, hair, face. Anything, she promises, breathless. Anything. Zoe makes this strange little sound, almost a snarl. Fuck, this is your first fucking time. Can I sit on your face? Rumi's brain short circuits briefly. The warm purple light of her patterns reflects back to her off Zoe's skin. She thinks about being suffused in Zoe's scent, her mouth filled with her, choking on her, nose and lips and tongue and chin being used roughly for her pleasure. And then she's nodding furiously, her patterns pulsing, mouth already falling helplessly, greedily open.
I'll spot you,
Mira offers, slightly hoarse but amused. To Rumi, she adds,
tap her thigh if something's up.
Zoe is so wet, she leaves a filthy trail all the way up Rumi's chest. Deliriously, Rumi thinks it'd be nice if she could keep it as a little souvenir. Zoe grips the headboard, Mira's hand at the small of her back, and slowly settles down on Rumi's fucking face. She immediately dribbles down Rumi's chin. She tastes obscene. Salty, rich, strong, and thick. As heady and strange and erotic as she smells. She's still holding Rumi's hand. Rumi may be the first demon ever to reach heaven. Zoe gives her a few tentative rolls of the hips, and Rumi moans for her, and mouths at her, and keeps her tongue firm for her to grind on, and Zoe's thrusts become more confident, less controlled. Rumi glows. She feels like she's passed a test. Tragically, Rumi can't actually smell her now. Zoe has drenched her so thoroughly she can't really breathe through her nose, has to steal gasping little breaths through her mouth every time Zoe's hips lift. But every other one of her senses is so wholly overloaded by everything Zoe. It would be truly discourteous to be disappointed. Zoe is running mindlessly into her now, mashing her cunt all over Rumi's lower face and rolling greedy, unself-conscious thrusts. It feels so good being used like this, without compunction, like Zoe doesn't doubt for even a second that she can take it and enjoy it and make it good. It's such a thrill. Through the haze, Rumi is vaguely aware of Mira's knee sliding between her legs, the sticky, wet tip of her cock just touching her stomach. And she doesn't even have the wherewithal to grind against her properly. She's just sort of wriggling around like a landed fish. And Mira pushes down on her stomach with a wry little, down, girl. And Zoe is fucking her face and cursing and grunting, and it's perfect. It's so fucking perfect. When Zoe's hips still, thighs shaking, Rumi takes the opportunity to lick into her more deliberately, taking control of the rhythm. She strains her neck so she can close her lips around her, roll her around on her tongue, and suck her into her mouth. Zoe keens, reaches down, grabs hold of Rumi's braid. She wraps it around her fist and pulls. It's not a very well-directed pull. It knocks Rumi's head a little to the side, and her mouth off Zoe's cunt. But it's the single hottest thing that's ever happened to her. Zoe finds a better angle, while Rumi latches back on, and it's like something snaps into place. Zoe bears down, and Rumi sucks hard on her clit, and Rumi can feel every individual contraction as Zoe comes in her mouth. The dull pain in her scalp, as Zoe tugs hard on her braid, is delicious. If she wasn't currently holding her breath, she could have gone on like this forever. All too soon, Zoe is sagging, panting over her, muscles relaxing. Rumi gives her a last few licks goodbye. Zoe shakily climbs off her and stumbles like a drunk little old man. Mira catches her against her chest and kisses her from behind. Rumi watches them as she catches her breath, feeling warm and lazy and content. Zoe picks up her own shirt off the floor and uses it to wipe her cum off Rumi's face. And it's a bit gross and a bit hot and a bit sweet. Rumi licks at her lips after she's done. Zoe's flavor is still so fucking strong on her skin, and maybe it'll soak into it and stay there forever if she's really good, she thinks. Mira kicks off her harness and flops down half on top of Rumi, and Rumi grabs her abruptly, letting out a little growl, and hugs her close and rubs her face aggressively in her chest like a dog. Mira cackles. Rowdy, she accuses, but Rumi isn't cowed, only holds her tighter. Let me in, Zoe demands, and jostles both of them when she jumps knees first onto the bed. Rumi lifts one arm in invitation, and Zoe immediately insinuates herself under it. They snuggle close, the two of them crushing her comfortably on either side, and Rumi breathes them in deep and settles down. Her right leg tucked in between Zoe's and pressed against Zoe's cunt. Her left arm trapped underneath Mira's shoulders and bound to lose sensation any minute. Mira runs her fingers idly along Rumi's hip bone and mouths at her throat. Wanna come again? Rumi laughs. I don't even know, she says, honestly. I just want to feel you. Like, forever. Yikes, Rumi. Buy two girls dinner and start a girl band and manifest spiritual weapons and get a Daesung award and kiss them senseless and save the world together first. Rumi takes Zoe's chin between forefinger and thumb and kisses her leisurely while Mira licks a stripe up her throat. And then she kisses Mira, filthy and slow, as Zoe gnaws viciously at the glowing skin of her shoulder and upper arm. And then she weighs one breast each in her hands, as Zoe and Mira lean over her to make out with each other, as if they've been practicing for years. Okay, Rumi murmurs. Done. Hmm, says Mira. Guess it's forever then. Rumi laughs and gathers the two of them closer, wondering if one person can be two big spoons at once, if it's possible to make three bodies intersect in the exact same space at the same time. Isn't that a quantum mechanics thing? The wave function? Maybe some of their particles are overlapping right now. Maybe they're all mixed up. Hers and Mira's and Mira's and Zoe's and hers. Maybe this distinction of ownership is meaningless, then, as long as they're touching. Maybe all of her is just theirs. And yeah, Rumi comes again, like a couple times. But who's counting? The end. Author's notes. Celine, why do we bash deadbeat dads for not being there for their kids, but we never question if the child has bad vibes? or if they're just unpleasant to be around.
Mira and Zoe. I want that twink obliterated. Anyway, having three people to play with was so much fun. So many subjects to populate all the run-on sentences. Thank you for reading, smiley face. Also, you definitely shouldn't be fingering anyone with acrylic nails. Let's call it creative liberty. Maybe Demon Pussy is just unshreddable. Reader's notes. So, I have to transit trains on my way to work. I was so engrossed, distracted, reading about post-canon touch star Rumi and her first forays into X-rated polytricks that I missed my train stop for work this morning. I missed my transit, I had to get off, run across the platform, go back uptown, and hope I wasn't late for work. Because Rumi's internal monologue gets me where I live. Touch-starved characters who are finding openness and vulnerability with people who know them? Me? Dean Winchester? John Shepherd? Is that you? Anyway, thank you so much to Gveret for having blanket permission to podfic. Congratulations, if I post this tomorrow, this will be the first podfic on the AO3 for the K-pop Demon Hunters fandom. Jazz hands! So, everyone else, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for helping me christen this fandom tag with OT3 lesbian porn. We love to see it. And have a nice day.